Station log, Stardate 48601.3. After receiving a minor dose of radiation poisoning, Chief O'Brien claims to have been making inexplicable jumps into the near future. Meanwhile, a Romulan delegation has arrived on the station, expecting an intelligence report on the Dominion. Welcome back, people from the past, present, future. What's going on here? To a new episode of the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast in our continuing season of looking at episodes themed around the Romulans, kind of. I am your regular host, Captain Mike Wilson. I'm joined, as always, by my loyal First Officer, GK.
Oh, boy. Hello.
And we are joined for the first time by a first-time guest to the podcast who we've been talking to back and forth over the internet. So please welcome to join us this week, Dag from Beyond Trek Podcast. Welcome.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for happily talking Trek with us and offering to come on and talk about this episode. So, yeah, I know you've just watched it because you've explained, and I also know you're flying a little bit blind in the podcast, so I'm going to be talking us through the different sections as we go. So, without any further ado, I'll jump straight into the first one, which is going to be a little bit of a baptism of fire, but I'll try not to, freak you out too much. So this is the section that I call Healing Frequencies Open.
Healing Frequencies Open, sir.
So, because you're a first-time guest, we always like to ask some big questions, perhaps. So apologies for putting you on this, but hopefully it's not going to be too painful. The very first question is, what first got you into Star Trek? Do you remember what your first experience was and what grabbed you and sort of cemented you as a fan?
I actually do. interestingly, on interactions in Twitter, there's always somebody posting threads about what was your first Trek experience. So not too recently, I got to recall mine. And my mom was a lifelong Trekkie and was, so still with us. Okay. But my first episode was The Most Toys, TNG, Data Gets Kidnapped. Oh, wow. By Kiva Svacho. And at the time, I was just completely enamored with Data. I don't remember a whole lot of episodes before and after that, but around the middle of the fifth season, that's when I like to say I became a whole person, because that's when I remember all the episodes I started watching after that. But yeah, The Most Toys.
Cool. That's a really weird coincidence, because when I was browsing YouTube earlier today, for the first time ever, it came up and suggested a video for me, and it was the original Kiva Svacho actor. And it was like, this is what the original footage was that was filmed. And I had no idea there was an actor before Saul Rubinek that was in the part. But yeah, apparently it was an actor who unfortunately tried to commit suicide during the filming, which is why he was replaced and then sadly did kill himself like 2 months later, just before the episode aired. Yeah, a British actor who apparently was in Time Bandits called David Rappaport.
And never.
Yeah, bizarrely. Seriously. The bizarre thing is there's so much of the footage available, and it's all on the Blu-ray, apparently. I haven't checked, but I watched it on YouTube. And yeah, they've got the original scene of like when Data's believed to be dead and he's talking on the view screen, and the scene of him in the brig once he's been captured. And it's pretty good. And, the most shocking part is that the makeup is completely different as well. He's got this weird big bouffant hair and like big pointy spiky out ears and stuff. So whether Saul Rubinek was just like, I'm not wearing all that, or they just decided to change the makeup, I don't know. But yeah, if you're ever curious and you didn't know that, look up original Kiva Svacho. Just a fascinating bit of random Trek lore.
I think it was all that you mentioned straight after stuff. This episode. I was a big fan of Rappaport.
Really? Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, Time Bandits is one of my favorite movies, and I'm remembering when the guy used to be on Tiz was.
Oh boy, that's going back some years. Aging yourself.
Mate, I am ancient.
Fair enough. Well, putting you back on the spot then, Dag, for a second. If you had to pick three episodes or a movie, if you want to show somebody that you think represents the very best of the Trek franchise, what would they be?
Great question. I would probably go with, shoot, I have to think about the kind of friends that I have and the kind of episodes that would resonate with those who haven't seen Star Trek. The Voyager episode where in the future they recover the Doctor's backup hologram.
Living Witness.
And, yeah. It's my favorite episode of Voyager. I can never remember the title, and I am dissatisfied with myself on that outcome. But yeah, Living Witness is amazing. Probably some of the quintessential, like the ones that hit home the most, probably Measure of a Man.
Mm-hmm. That's come up a few times. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you want to relate to a wider audience, you can't just go with Best of Both Worlds 1 and 2 and Time's Arrow. So
Time's Arrow, maybe not, but I have to say Best of Both Worlds, I think, was one of the earliest episodes I saw. And I just thought it was amazing because there's not that much backstory to need to know other than we've met the Borg before. So I think that could work.
Yeah. Yeah, it could. But yeah, Living Witness, Measure of a Man, and yeah, Best of Both Worlds, if we can cross a two-parter into a single.
Oh, for sure. I always count two-parters as one story. Why not? So yeah, on a similar note then, do you have three favorite characters across all of the various series and films?
Oh, boy. Yeah, my favorite characters are always the outsider characters. So Data, the Doctor, and Odo.
That is almost word for word what the last guest that did this said, Alison, who was on. She picked Data and she picked the EMH. She didn't pick Odo, but I forget. I think Spock was her third, and it was for basically the same reason, the outsider characters that you can relate to. So, yeah, very weird. And I have to, similar reasons for me, but I picked Spock on my list, and then I think I went with Picard, and I forget who my third was still. But, yeah. Cool. So, yeah, a couple of questions left, and one big question. What's your favorite series of them all?
Deep Space Nine.
Oh, so you're quite fitting that we're looking at a DS9 episode today, then.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Oh, yeah. When you did the all call, specifically for this episode, I was like, yeah, I'm in it.
Cool. And, yeah, because we're looking at sort of Romulan-themed stories this season, then the last question for you, do you have any particular favorite Romulan characters, arcs, episodes, anything you want to shout out?
Oh, wow. The new Strange New Worlds season one finale.
We just looked at that.
Yeah. I love it. Again, I'm a time travel junkie, so I love episodes that go into alternate timelines, temporal weirdness, even just looking at the future, which is why, you know, Living Witness is a pretty powerful episode to me. but, you know, to get that mirrored sort of conversation between Pike and the Romulan commander, and then sort of the same way with Kirk and the Romulan commander in the original episode. It's just really cool to see the hallmarks of the Federation echo across those timelines, maybe in a different way. But yeah, the Centurion or the Romulan commander of that ship is pretty esteemable. But I also am a big fan of the Romulan from TNG's The Next Phase, who gets tossed out tossed through the Enterprise wall and just ends up floating away. Yeah. I feel so bad for that guy. Like, that's got to be terrible.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There is one of the Enterprise crew. I don't even think it's that episode, but one of them that gets like half melded between the floor and dies just horrifically. Just looking pretty gross. But yeah, Star Trek, it's not a safe place to be all the time, Wesley.
It's not.
Well, I mean, it's the Romulans' fault. If you will use an artificial quantum singularity for your power source, you're going to have problems, as we learn in this episode that we're reviewing. So, yeah, fair enough. Cool. Well, that's all the questions that I have then. So that hopefully wasn't too bad of an interrogation for you.
No, that was great. I love doing that stuff.
That was one of the quickest and most sort of concise, I think, we've had as well. Normally people are just umming and ahhing trying to pick episodes, but you know your tricks. So.
You know your stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, the next section then, if you are new to us or you're joining us for the first time, is the section that gives the podcast its name, and it is the hit or miss section.
Well, what about my performance?
I'm not a drama critic.
And for the benefit of our first-time guest, Dag, or anyone listening, the hit or miss section is basically where I pick random things from anything in the Star Trek universe, pop them up on screen if you're watching on YouTube, or shout them out to our guest and co-host here, and ask if they think they're a hit or a miss, debate back and forth if there's any kind of dissension, a little bit of an explanation, and then consensus, and then we move on. And being a Romulan-themed series, there will be some Romulan things in the section, but I won't just fill it with that because we like to keep a little bit of variety. So, yeah, the guest and co-host don't know what to expect. So are you guys nervous? Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Awesome. So how about you, DK? You ready this week?
I'm sure there'll be something that I'll have to quickly Google just to, you know, poke my brain and get it, get the synapses firing. But yeah.
Fair enough. Well, the first one is kind of Romulan themed. It's a group of characters, and I don't think you'll need to Google this one. Hit or miss, the Reemans. And Dag, you're the guest, will come to you first.
Absolute miss.
Okay, well, reasons why, then. What do you think?
As far as I recall, the director of Nemesis was not much of a Star Trek fan, and so used that as a playground to just invent a whole lot of things. And I'm sure the cast was like, "Well, we're getting paid for it." And it's not like the cast remembers most of the episodes that they've done. You've seen all the interviews. It's not really their job to be canon aficionados like the fans. But I remember the costume designer saying that they were told that they needed to come up with something, some kind of uniform that looked like a Beatles carapace. And I'm like, this is the worst possible costume you could have come up for that. They look like they just left a goth vinyl bondage club. You know, like it's like one of those memes. They're carrying around these weapons, so it's like when you've got to hit the bondage club at 8, but destroy the Enterprise at 9. Kind of a deal there.
Or frankly, the way I see it, when you've got to destroy the Vampire Slayer at 8 and then kill the Enterprise crew at 9, because
yes,
come on, they've walked straight off the set of Buffy, haven't they?
Absolutely. They didn't need to invent this. They didn't need to put Ron Perlman and all of that makeup concealing his glorious cat-like face and gestures and stuff. I love Ron Perlman. They could have just made this as easily just a Romulan prison colony of actual Romulans, instead of inventing a whole new race and then putting a clone of Picard in there.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing, but yeah.
I rewrote this movie. Really? I rewrote this in my own fan time between classes when I was in college to be about Thomas Riker and lore.
Ooh, that was
like, if you want to have the whole mirroring and echoing across the universe thing, let's use bad guys that we already have an investment in.
Mm.
So yeah. lore had broken Thomas Riker out of prison, and that's all I remember. It was probably not a great rewrite, but it was still better than Nemesis.
Fair enough. Well, we're reviewing Nemesis later in the series, so I won't give my thoughts on that fully. Ooh. Just yet. But yeah, so one miss for the Reemans. DK, what about you? Are you going to change our minds here? Or...
I'm not even going to attempt to. Yeah, it's a miss from me. It just smacks of, you know, we've had these Romulans for so many years. They're a little dull. Let's throw something else into the mix and try and spice them up a bit. And no, it's just a failure for me. It doesn't improve the Romulan situation for me whatsoever. So I'm going to say no, it's a definitely a miss.
And I'm going to I will make it a threesome in the words of Worf, because I'm also going to call them a huge miss. Like I said, I just don't. I mean, I get the logic in universe, which is that, you know, they've never seen the sun and they grew up in caves and whatever else. But as far as I'm aware, that doesn't evolutionarily turn you into a vampire. There's no reason why, you know, they're from the same origin, just the same as the Vulcans and the Romulans. Why would they mutate into these weird bat-faced freaky things? It's just,
you know, maybe Remus is actually Arda, and they dwelled too deep and too greedily and found the One Ring, and then this just did that to them.
Just a species of proto golems.
Yeah. Yeah. You can just see Tom Hardy on stage spewing, "We must have Picard. He's the precious."
Watch it, or we'll just have you doing impressions for the rest of the episode.
Oh, my favorite. No.
But no, I don't get why they needed to make them look so monstrous when, as far as I'm aware, I mean, we never really saw Remans or such, but I just assumed, you know, sister planet of Romulus, they're just going to look like Romulans. And then to have them be this whole other weird looking species and just straight out monsters with no redeeming qualities, and it was just silly. I didn't like them at all, I have to say. And yeah.
They told their presence completely kills any effort on the audience's part to try and deduce who the bad guys are, because the director makes it so just ridiculously over the top obvious that these monster guys are the bad guys. Because in our, you know, at the end, we've got the monster guys and then the Romulans and then the humans. And the director's like, yeah, but the audience needs to know who the bad guys are by sight. And I'm like, give your audience the benefit of the doubt. Let them be smarter than you think they are.
I completely agree. I think it could have easily just been a faction of the people that looked like Romulans and were intelligent enough to work out that, you know, it's a big planet. Just because we're making peace overtures with a lot of them doesn't mean there won't be dissenters. It's not like we didn't have the Duras sisters and they were like, well, we need to make sure they look evil, so make them look more not Klingon. We can understand, we can grasp the politics, you know. So yeah.
I feel like all of these suits were just reused for the Zindi in Enterprise.
Very probably.
The Reptilians.
I'm
pretty certain the makeup was just left over from when they finished filming Buffy, as I said. So
yeah, 100%.
This is not my. Or they were just going to do yet another remake of Nosferatu, and then we're like, well, we've got a Trek movie on the go. That'll do. Anyway, no, I think overall we're just going to have to say miss. We're not going to disagree, but it's not a huge positive. One of the rare misses, I think, for the podcast this series. Well, I don't know if I am hoping we do better with the second one. Let's see if I can pop it up. And I'll give you something not Romulan first. And if you know me, you know I'm the ship guy, so I always try and put ships on. And we're running out of the more obvious ships. So, you know, if you're on YouTube, you'll see an image of this one. If not, you probably won't know what I'm talking about unless you Google it. So hit or miss for the USS Joubert, a.k.a. the Courage class. Gosh. And, yeah, Dag, I'll come to you first again.
I love Art Nouveau, and I love Art Deco, and this ship just captures that aesthetic. It looks a little bit like the Eisenberg class, but, you know, I'll look that up. But I still dig it.
That's cool. That's good reasoning. DK, what about you?
I wasn't overly familiar with this one. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Eisenberg class because that's what I pilot in Star Trek Online. But this one...
Okay, cool.
This is the first time I'm pretty much noticing it.
In War of Discovery.
I was going to say, was it? Yeah, but I'm sure it was just a blink and you'll miss it kind of appearance. I like it. I like it. As opposed to the kind of Romulan of ship design that you showed us last episode, I really like this one. I think it looks... Yeah. It's almost like a... It's got that Fifth Element kind of vibe to it. I like the design on this one. Yeah, so I'm gonna give this a hit.
Okay, I also think it's a hit just because I'm gonna sound like I'm just copying off Dag, but just because I like that in the 32nd century there are some things that don't just look like what we're used to and have the traditional, you know, saucer drive section two nacelles, you know, bosh, there you go. Because it's been 1,000 years, so Starfleet would have experimented with other things and things that look futuristic and a bit different, and this is one of the ones that I think really does. You know, it's got weird dead space towards the back of it. There's no identifiable, I mean, I think you can see engines and stuff at the back, but there's no identifiable warp as such. And it's just got, like you said, this cool kind of, I don't know, almost surrealist tendencies to it, but with the sort of traditional, almost Galaxy Quest-esque sort of main part where you can imagine the crew all kind of live and mill about as usual. And yeah, it's just, it's dynamic. I like the look of it. I like that it's a little bit different. And it fits the future aesthetic, I think, a little bit better than things that are just, you know, we'll do the Constitution class, but make the nacelles float. So, fair enough. So any last thoughts on that before I share the next thing?
No, I think you guys have summed it up fairly well.
Cool. think Dag's just comparing, contrasting to the Eisenberg glass at the moment.
No, it's super obvious now. I haven't paid much attention to the other ships of the line. My co-host Redzo would be upset with me.
Oh, fair enough. We're a bit like that. I'm the ship guy, and DK is like, I've never seen this before. Like, we'll come back to Romulan beam things, then, and we'll see. This is an episode that we're not covering as a full review, so we may as well ask about it here. Hit or miss for the Next Generation episode, Face of the Enemy. And if you're not familiar, it's basically the one where Deanna Troi wakes up and she's a Romulan. There you go. Simple as that. Dag, what do you think of this one?
I think this episode is a hit. It's one of those episodes that knows its audience, and it has that subtext of Ambassador Spock's movement continuing on from the events of Unification the season before. And it is a complete banger for Marina Sirtis to step out of the Deanna Troi role and into this formidable, almost scary leader. I absolutely love that the actress got the opportunity, and I love that this gets added to Deanna's repertoire as things that she can do leading up to, actually, I'm not even certain. I think Face of the Enemy was season 6, but so was her Deanna's command test in the middle of that season. So I'm not sure if Face of the Enemy comes before that or after that, but either...
Yeah, I've got a feeling the command test was season 7, but I could be wrong.
The command test was...
In my head, it's around about Lower Decks.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Time, I'm probably wrong. The command test is a Data episode. It's the one where he ends up amnesiac on the planet.
Dino himself, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so... okay, then. Well, then this just adds to that, to lend support to Deanna's escalating command orientation. Yeah.
You are right, though, because it's around the time when they actually start realizing, you know, she's a fully fleshed person, and put her in a uniform and give her stuff to do that isn't just, ooh, I sense they might be lying.
Yes.
So, yeah,
fair Captain, enough. I sense the audience already knows what's going on. Why do I have to repeat it?
Yeah. Deanna, can you tell if they're lying? Well, they think they're telling the truth.
Just imagine I don't know why this clicked into my head, but like a Ferengi Betazoid who's sitting on the Enterprise, and Picard's like, can you tell if they're lying? And he's like, I'm not sure, and just like puts their fingers out.
Maybe.
Two slips of Latin.
What's it push?
One of them is definitely not telling the truth, Captain.
Yikes. So, DK, what about you with Face of the Enemy? Can you even remember it? Let's be honest.
I can vaguely remember it. I do remember being very impressed with Marina Sirtis's acting in this. It was nice that she got a chance to shine, flex her acting muscles a bit. I think the premise, if I remember rightly, was a little convoluted, but I'm used to that with this Romulan episode, shall we say. Not a big fan of the aesthetics, obviously. There's, you know, as we can see in that picture, you know, Romulans doing juiced.
At least there's no more pink
from this year's Eurovision. It's oh, good grief. Yeah, but you know, that aside, there are worse plots. Yeah, I can never get past these costumes. I just despise them so much. But that aside, I quite enjoyed this episode. So it's a hit from me.
Yeah, I'm not going to sound very original, so I won't take up too long, because I just want to echo everything you guys said. I love that it gave Marina Sirtis a chance to flex the acting chops, give the character something to do. I like that it related to the Spock unification thing I was already going to say. And I'm always a sucker for when you develop tension in these episodes by having to have somebody, you know, put on a pretense and pretend they're somebody they're not, and the audience is in on it, but the kind of people that are being duped aren't, because it gives you, I don't know, maybe it makes me feel intelligent or feel like I'm privileged because I know, but at the same time, you can get the nerves of like, oh, your cover's going to get blown. So I always kind of like that kind of stuff, and that's why I'm drawn to spy films quite often. I don't know. But yeah, it's a hit for me as well. So.
And I also want to give a big shout out to Scott McDonald, who plays Nevek in that episode, because Scott McDonald is like a recurring actor in Trek.
Oh, yes.
And I really just appreciate every time I see him. I think his eyes are number two to Robert O'Reilly's.
Mm.
Who plays?
I know that he played. Is it Garanagar, the Jem'Hadar? That's mainly what I know.
Yeah, he played Garanagar. He played Tosk.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been in a lot of stuff, as you say, because I think he's kind of, he does stunts and stuff as well. So anytime there's prosthetics or it involves stunt stuff, he'll be around. Good actor, though, definitely.
Yeah, I just appreciate the conviction that he brings to not just Nevek, but the roles that he played in DS9 as well, that those characters are convicted in their goals.
Yeah. I always think people that put up with those prosthetics deserve respect as well, because I couldn't be bothered to do that for like 12 hours or whatever it is and have all this stuff gunk just stuck to your face. So, yeah. Right, so I've got one more thing then for the hit or miss, and it isn't one of them themes, just to vary it up. So hit or miss for the Zindi War arc, or basically Enterprise Season 3, since it made it up most of it. So yeah, Dag, welcome to you on that one first again.
Oh, I love the Zindi arc. I love it. Season 3 is my favorite season of Enterprise. And it's, I think I was geared up for that because of Deep Space Nine, where it went into that sort of episode or that seasonal continual storytelling. You got these episodes in the middle that like they took place individually, but there was this arc that progressed through the beginning and in the end of that season. So big hit for me.
Awesome. DK?
100% hit. I was a big fan of Enterprise, even when everyone else at the time seemed to be really disparaging towards it. So when the Zindi arc kicked in, and it just seemed to go to a whole new level. And as Dag said, the arc over the season, I just thought it was fantastic. I never really missed an episode of Enterprise anyway, but when this came along, it was kind of a must watch. I'm still a little torn on. Obviously, I can see the character development in it. I'm a little torn of Archer going from, friendly Scott Bakula type into his more, I'm not going to take any crap. But obviously, the stakes are higher. So yeah, it's a huge hit for me. Love this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, again, this is going to be boring for the audience because I think it's a massive hit. I don't love all of season 3, but the ones that I don't like in that season tend not to be about the Zindi arc. It's the ones that do the old Trek thing again or just have a slight like lip service to it. And the actual arc itself is fabulous. I think it's got a little bit of everything. You've got the kind of espionage character work of something like Stratagem. You've got the ongoing stuff between Reed and Major Hayes that goes throughout the entire season. Yeah, you've got Hoshi finding something to do towards the end there when she's called upon. I love the completely, for me, unexpected reveal of like the actual force behind it being the Sphere Builders and linking it to those and to the Expanse and these things that seemed completely disparate all actually being part of the whole story towards the end. I thought was brilliant the way it came together. And yeah, can't really say much else. I think it was great as well. So it's a hit for me. Well, so we're all in agreement up to now, but we'll see if that holds when we move on to our main review for the episode this week. And yeah, we will begin our analysis of that one. So, this week, as we alluded to, we're looking at an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which does feature the Romulans, the episode Visionary. And yeah. Before I go any further, I do have some behind-the-scenes things about the episode to talk through. More than I realized, so hopefully it passes by quickly without you having to listen to me ramble too much. And guys, if you guys want to chip in with any, reactions, thoughts, feelings, anything you've heard about this, then feel free. And otherwise, I'll just dive straight in and tell you that this episode, it was written by freelancer Ethan H. Kalk, who sold the story on his very first pitch session to DS9. He pitched numerous other ideas before finally landing his second seal, which was contributing to the story for the episode Children of Time. So the guy apparently likes time travel weirdness. The pitch for the ep was taken by René Echevarria, who saw it as, quote, a very different, clever science fiction premise with a twist, a story that had a nice built-in clock element. He further commented that the episode was a nice twist on the time travel show and that it could be a bottle show to save money. In the original version of the episode story, it was Odo who jumped forward in time to see DS9 destroyed, but according to Echevarria, this was changed because the writers felt they'd done too many Odo stories that season, and I guess because, you know, O'Brien has to suffer. In his pitch, Kalk had used Norsicans as the villains, but they were rejected as not familiar enough, and so in response, he created the Romulan-Klingon intrigue plot. So we may well not have been looking at this in an alternate universe, and we'd have been waiting till the Norsican season, which that would have been a very short one. Ira Stephen Baer asked a friend of his, John Shirley, who was well-versed in complicated sci-fi concepts, to write the teleplay. He hadn't written for television, and he wanted to take a shot at it, said Baer. He later said of the experience, "I won't say it was the most pleasant experience he ever had in his career." Oh, dear. The script also received an uncredited rewrite by Ronald D. Moore, and it was Moore's idea to kill the present O'Brien and replace him with a duplicate from the future. So, you know, blame him. Moore was also part of the writing staff for the Next Generation episode Second Chances, which we've alluded to earlier, where the team temporarily considered also killing off William Riker and replacing him with his own transporter duplicate, which I have to say I didn't know they were planning on doing until reading this. I'm so glad they didn't do that. That would have been so dumb. Bashir's use of hyronolin as a treatment for radiation poisoning is a reference to the original series episode The Deadly Years. The reference was added by Ron Moore, who's a noted fan of the original series. And yeah. Science advisor Andre Bomanis, hang on a sec, where was it? There we go. Had two major tasks: to find a technical explanation for why O'Brien was jumping through time, and to determine how the Klingons could transport surveillance equipment into a bulkhead. Finding out the first wasn't difficult, according to Bomanis, as he merely had to create a description of what mechanism might allow O'Brien to do what he's doing. He did admit, though, that the use of radiation as a trigger was a little on the campy side. And as for the surveillance equipment, oh boy, Bomanis thought it quite plausible that, quote, "somebody had gone to the trouble of hollowing out a space inside the wall for the object and then used a very carefully tuned transporter beam to get it there." However, he was concerned about modifying a replicator, as it had been established that replicators only operate on a molecular level while transporters require quantum level resolution. I have no idea what any of these words mean. But Manus's belief that such a modification would have required a great deal of skill was briefly addressed through Odo's line that the culprit had performed a very sophisticated, very professional job, which is personally all I need to hear because I went cross-eyed just reading that. Robert Hewitt Wolf noted that the darts game was useful when plotting the episode because it gave a way to establish that O'Brien's time jumps weren't taking any time in the present. He could, as we see, throw the dart, go through a 5-minute experience in the future, then return to see the dart hit the wall. Jack Shearer, who plays the Romulan Ruon in the episode, would go on to play the role of Admiral Hayes in Star Trek First Contact, a role he reprised in the Voyager episode Hope and Fear. Dr. Bashir uses a familiar-looking tool to adjust the armband that O'Brien uses to shift forward in time. It's actually a warp nacelle from a Romulan Warbird model. It's slightly mollified, coloured in grey instead of green, and blinking lights are added to the inside. Gotta love the thrifty Trek props makers. And speaking of Romulans, the footage of the Romulan Warbird firing on DS9 is footage that was previously used to depict a Warbird firing on Admiral Jarok's shuttle in the Next Gen episode, The Defector. So again, thrifty money-saving from the Trek crew. Right, so with that out of the way, then I'm going to ask the question that I always ask, which is, can you remember the first time you saw this episode and what were your initial impressions of it? And again, Dagio, the guest, will come to you first on that one.
Well, first, let me just say that I'm sure it is no coincidence that Ron Moore included hyronolin in the show.
Yeah.
Pointing that part out.
Oh, Ronolin. Well, Ron. You see, that's probably, yeah. I did not he even was watching, make that connection.
I just imagine Ronald Moore sitting around watching the original series as a kid, and he's not really paying attention because he's a kid. And then he hears on the screen, "Hi, Ron." He's like, "What?"
What you don't know is middle name's actually Alan. So he heard, "Hi, Ron Allen." And he was like, "Oh, that's me."
Perfect. Mom, they said my name. And all of Trek history has been rewritten because of that one made up word.
Oh dear.
So let's see. This is a third season episode of Deep Space Nine, which puts it in, let's see, 94-95 year. So I was 12-13 at the time. I saw this in its first run. I don't remember my first reactions to it. It would be college before DS9 came out on DVD, and I bought the third season because it was on right. super clearance somewhere, and I ran through that just repeatedly. And Visionary always stands out as, like you admitted, it's a like you recounted, it's a great twist on the standard time travel plot. whoever decided to kill O'Brien, past O'Brien, and have him replaced by his future self is probably the same person who killed Harry Kim in Parallax.
It was in Deadlock, but I made exactly the same comment on a lot of the feedback of the audience.
Yeah. It has all the best hallmarks, and I didn't think of it as a bottle show before you said it, but I'm like, wow, this is a really good bottle show, because when I do my rewatches, I'm like, oh, bottle show. And I've watched this dozens of times, and it never occurs to me that this is a bottle show, because I'm so invested in O'Brien trying to figure out what the heck is happening to him.
Yeah.
So what a brilliant way to save money in the middle of a season and produce a banger at the same time.
Absolutely. I feel ridiculous, but I've just noticed you've got the station exploding behind you.
So, and I'm noticing that DK has the same icon. So
yes,
it is Avatar. Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm sticking with Star Trek Darts, the future. Darts.
O'Brien. Totally relevant for the episode.
Oh, you gotta love the traditional stereotypical Irishness, but yeah, cool. That's fair enough. Yeah, I think I realized it was going to be a somewhat cheaper episode because the big inciting incident happens off screen. So the episode starts and they pick up O'Brien and they're like, "You got hit by radiation, but don't worry, we didn't have to show it. We saved ourselves an effect." You know?
DS9's great with those cold opens, though. Like you're immediately sucked into O'Brien's plight. And again, O'Brien Must Suffer episodes, they're always hit.
Yeah, fair. I mean, O'Brien and Cold Meanie are great, obviously. So that goes without saying. But yeah, cool. So DK, what about you? What are your initial recollections of the first time you saw it?
I honestly don't really remember the first time I saw it. This will not surprise you, Mike, but I was drinking quite heavily when I watched this the other day, so I'm not sure I can actually recollect watching it this time.
As I said to you, it probably makes about as much sense as it did to me watching it sober, so I wouldn't worry.
I do know that about 3 years ago we watched, we had a marathon run of all the DS9 episodes, so I will have watched it in that, but whether I was half asleep at that point, it never really stood out to me, so I quite enjoyed this was almost like the first time watching it again.
All right, okay, so this is another one to tick off on the despite what you say, actually enjoying Romulan themed episodes.
I never said that. I like it for Miles. I always love seeing Colin Meaney playing Miles. I think he's a fantastic actor, and he represents the Irish, so I'm big up on that. And the fact that they're having darts, it made me want to get dartboard again. I don't want to come down with radiation poisoning, but I would take the darts aspect.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I used to love playing darts back in the day.
If you guys ever want to come across the pond, I got a dartboard all set up. Let's go.
Really? It's a long way to go to play darts, but maybe someday.
Yeah, part of your dad's house.
You say across the pond, DK lives in Spain, so we have to convene from all over the world.
Let's meet in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really a lot to say other than the first time I saw this episode, I couldn't really remember it either. I don't think it's a super memorable episode. I think it tries to do a lot, but doesn't really have any huge repercussions at the end of it. But it's in the middle of a season where a lot happens, and I think that's kind of why I think it was in and out of my memory. Because, as you've kind of said, it was the third season, so we really kicked off the Dominion War arc properly. We discovered who the Founders are, we introduced the Defiant, and there was a big ramp-up of the Dominion War, which it's kind of nice to see that it's still in the background here. You know, the Romulans have lent them the cloaking device, so they're here for an intelligence report on the Dominion, so it still keeps it in the audience's mind, which I like. As you say, the series itself, DS9, was quite serialized, so it was good to see it carry on with that, but without it overwhelming the episode.
When did this episode air in relation to the Dias cast?
It was before, but not by much. like a few weeks before, I think.
Yeah. I think that two-parter just completely overshadows the season. It is a climactic moment, and all the episodes that come after are just sort of the epilogue.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, the thing that bugged me the most about it, and I think which kind of sort of hurts it in my mind, is just that they uncover this sort of epic big Romulan plot, and we see the potential outcome of it in the alternate future. You know, it's destroyed the station and the wormhole and everything, and they don't face any kind of punishment for it. It's just like, so get off the station. Bye. I'm like, really? So, you know.
Yeah, that makes like... That makes me imagine some kind of Bajoran leadership going like, yeah, but we paid him to be here, so just let him go.
I personally imagine Starfleet hearing about this plot and being like, yeah, but we really need that cloak. So like, don't annoy them too much, you know?
Captain, you have two decisions to make here. You can either let Admiral Thorson continue with his Section 31 plot to convince the Romulans to investigate the changelings, or you lose your cloaking device.
Exactly.
Pick one.
Yeah. But no, I got kind of annoyed because I thought like the repercussions didn't match how big their kind of sly Romulanish plot was. But yeah, anyway. Before I go into the nitty-gritty and the kind of breakdown of this episode, I will say we have been doing a little special thing this season inspired by the Delta Flyers podcast, which was unplanned, but our first guest, Adrienne, came on with a killer limerick. So now we're apparently doing this going forward. And so I joined in and did haikus to kind of offset her limericks. And yeah, it's kind of fallen to me, I think, to do this, because I'm guessing, DK, you don't have anything for us this week.
I have nothing. There is nothing I could possibly come up with slash fiction wise that could beat what's already been said about Miles and Julian.
Oh yeah, the subtext is, you know, it's rapidly approaching text throughout the episode, pretty much. So yeah, fair enough. Well, I have done a limerick and a haiku, because I asked Adrienne to do a limerick and she basically said no because she's not on the episode. So I'm going to start with one and I'll do one at the end of the review. So which one do you guys want first, limerick or haiku?
I'm going to say haiku.
Okay.
I will also say haiku.
Fair enough. So this is my very to the point haiku then. O'Brien's luck stinks. No one wants to watch their death. Feckin' Romulans. Yeah, simple as that. So again, if you're not familiar with our reviews, we break them down into little sections. We're not strict about it, but we break it into like writing, direction, what else? Let's see, acting, the overall plot, VFX, sound design, random bits and pieces. Then we'll reconvene and come up with our favorite character moment and line at the end of all that. So just to start off with the writing, because we've kind of already touched upon that a little bit. Did either of you guys have anything you wanted to kind of shout out about the writing that stood out for positive or negative?
Not particularly. I will notice, and I think it's too close to the air date for it to be accused of being too similar. But I think it's January or February of 95. Is that right?
I don't know, but I can certainly open up our memory alpha and tell you.
It's very, very similar in some parts to Babylon Squared from season one of Babylon 5, which aired in August the year before.
I'm sure it's a coincidence. These things take ages to
work. Yeah, yeah.
It was 27th February 1995. There you go.
So yeah, that's what kept occurring to me. It was just very similar. And as I say, I'm not saying there's any plagiarism involved. I just think it's one of those coincidences where, you know, you see a lot of similar kind of vibes in two episodes.
Yeah, two shows about a station that's the last hope for mankind, featuring a main character who has some temporal shenanigans thrust upon him. Ah, yeah, no similarities at all.
If you had
a nickel, you'd probably have enough to have a nickel for every episode of Deep Space Nine.
Exactly. I mean,
to answer your question from earlier, by the way, Dag, I've just looked this up, and it's even more egregious than I realized. There are two episodes after this, and then it's Improbable Cause and the Die is Cast.
Yeah.
So it's like immediately, pretty much after this, because one of those two is a Mirror Universe episode as well. So it's like almost nothing happens between them.
If I recall, there's a through plot of Romulan shenaniganery. That's one of my favorite words, by the way, shenaniganery. There's a through plot that starts in season three and goes all the way to Inter Arnhem Silent Legis. Inter Arma Silent Legis.
The Arma Inum Silent Legis. In times of war, the Lords fall silent.
Thank you. Yeah.
All my Latin that I know is from Star Trek episode titles, so don't.
Yeah, cringe. I hate to branch too far away from this episode, but like we get this, we get the Dias cast, and then season six we bring the Romulans into the war, and then if you look at the star dates, it's like almost literally 1 year later. There's this Romulan summit that Section 31 is intimately interested in, and so it's very interesting to find that episode through line and just watch those episodes.
Yeah.
After it makes a really good play to say after the Dominion War, Romulus is having some issues and there's some power vacuums. And then you've got this subset of Romulans who are like, hey, we were free during the war. We want to be free again. By the way, we can destroy Earth for you at half cost.
Yeah, exactly. And then of course, it all went pear-shaped because, you know, planet war. That's a different story. So,
those poor Romulans.
I mean, they go through a lot in what, like 20 or 30 years in universe time. It's a rough time for them, but DK's sitting there like, they deserve it.
Yes.
So what did you guys think of the overall kind of the big thing in this episode is obviously the O'Brien time jump slip, whatever you want to call it thing. How did you feel that was handled, and did you have any sort of problems or any praise for it?
From a observational perspective, I was right there with O'Brien all the way up when he died and then was replaced by his future self. I was like, I don't know if that tracks. Like, if you die, can you be replaced by your future self? Is this more multiverse travel than it is time travel? Very interesting thing to think about there. But I like what you said about how the writers tried to demonstrate those shifts where he would throw the dart and then shift for a few minutes and then come back and we see the dart hit the dartboard, and it really just shows the audience that these flashes are momentary in the present moment. It's a great narrative device, and it also lends itself to fans going, wait a second, if he was unconscious for 15 minutes, was stuff happening on the thing by that time? What's going on here? So it's just poof.
It avoids that for sure, but I will say I'm with you in that I think it works best for me at the very start when you have moments that you can see from both O'Brien's perspectives. So he sees the event and then we, you know, a little bit of time passes and then he sees it from the other side and watches himself watching. And when it starts, you know, he's changing it so it doesn't happen that way, it starts to fall apart, the plot, a lot. And like you said, the whole O'Brien complaining about temporal mechanics was me towards the end, because I'm like, this doesn't make any sense, because, you know, he sees the event which would lock it into place and, all right, you want to change it or whatever else, but like you said, it doesn't really fit the time travel rules of Star Trek. It sort of does the Avengers Endgame thing of we're all doing branching off multiversal different things, and yeah, it's weird. It's just bizarre.
Would you be a fan of Quantum Leap?
Kind of. I mean, I watched it. DK is a bigger fan than me, I'll say that.
I was obsessed.
Oh, person after my own heart. You know, it follows the rules of Quantum Leap pretty well. Jumps forward, sees something, goes back, fixes it.
It does if you don't realize that he's sort of leaping into himself, which is why you have issues. But as you say, it's not even like he's doing that, because he duplicates himself. But like I said, it's one of those things that always bugs me in time travel, because like you at the end, I'm just kind of like, so if you died because you traveled to the past, then your future self can't then go back and be fine, because you died. You know, it's just, it doesn't make sense. Anyway, but we'll be here all day debating that one back and forth.
Of course.
What about you, DK? How did you feel about the whole time travel, wibbly wobbly, Doctor Who has nothing on us kind of thing?
I did like some aspects of it. I did like the little the sections where he saw himself. It set up in a really kind of, gave me an eerie vibe that reminded me of, you know, certain Doctor Who episodes or even Sapphire and Steel. I was into that. The whole thing later with replacing himself, I'll be honest, I was kind of lost by that point, but I'm putting that more down to the alcohol.
No, it really wasn't. Again, Subaru didn't make any sense either. I do have a quick quote that I wanted to drop in then, talking about that, from Ronald D. Moore, talking about the writing and the plot in that regard. He says that the episode, he saw it as a departure from the standard time travel plots and commented, "It's a very cool story because it was a different way to do time travel that we hadn't really played yet, which was going a short distance into the future and returning with that knowledge, seeing yourself die and the station explode. It just became fun to try and play those scenes out, to enjoy the plot and not get bogged down in, oh my God, we're changing history." Maybe you should have. "You can play the gag of seeing yourself dead and bitching to the doctor because he didn't save your life," which I did love. I actually just, that scene I thought was perfect, to be honest. So, yeah. I like a lot of the things they do with it, but it just, to me, it just doesn't hold up plot-wise. But, you know, we're nitpicking about fictional things because time travel isn't real. So
here comes Joel.
I was just going to say, you beat me to it, yeah. The old Mystery Science Theater, it's just a show, Mike. Stop trying to make logic out of it. So, yeah, fair enough. Well, but dealing with something else then for a second, I'm going to come here, DK, and I'm going to come to you first. What did you think of the Romulan plot in this episode?
I will say I did like the fact that they kind of offset it by also making the Klingons a little shady. But it's Romulans. I don't know why anyone is surprised by anything they do anymore.
It does rather reek of, like, why the heck do we trust them at this point?
It's just like, No, it's one of those things where, one of those episodes where my expectations were met, and for a while I was thinking, because I didn't remember it, I was thinking, yeah, they've kind of, you know, off-footed me here. I'm gonna come out of this liking this, because it's gonna not turn out to be the, oh no, it's the Romulans. And yeah, it was the more things change.
I mean, at least they didn't, you know, turn around and reveal Sealer at the very end was secretly behind it all.
No, they didn't go the whole Panto route. But, you know, it's these kind of episodes that make me just so over the whole Romulan thing. We started off brilliantly in this season with things like Balance of Terror and, you know, Quality of Mercy. And then slowly we're just sliding into this pit of just, why does anyone even take anything they say at face value anymore?
I'm really annoyed because you're not on the next episode when I know for a fact that the Romulans don't fall back on their old kind of sneaky ways and we actually get a little bit of a different look at them, but never
mind. I think you did that on purpose.
Hey, you were the one that decided what you wanted to be on and what you didn't, all right? Don't blame me for that. But yeah, so... if you are listening on Subspace, by the way, we're going to go for a quick break now. If you're on YouTube, stick around for a little ad for our other podcast.
Action. We're the Silver Screen Podcast. Hey there, film buffs. I'm DK, your cult movie uber geek, and I'm here with my co-host, Mike Wilson.
That's right, folks. We're your guides through the world of cinema, from beloved classics to the hottest films in the zeitgeist. On the Silver Screen Podcast, we dive deep into film culture. Join us as we review movies with honesty and respect, offering our unique take on what makes them tick.
And don't forget our Silver Screen Cult Classics episodes. We'll take you on a journey through the hidden gems, the cult films that deserve more love, and the stories behind them. We've a blast welcoming all manner of movie-loving guests for lively discussion and to share our love of films. Their passion and knowledge make every episode a cinematic adventure.
Plus, we'll give you our own scores straight from the heart out of 5 stars. You'll hear our honest verdicts no matter how much we geek out about a film. And remember what Arnie said, we'll be back. So don't miss a single episode of the Silver Screen Podcast.
Subscribe now to the Silver Screen Podcast YouTube channel or find us wherever you get your podcasts. Let's embark on a cinematic journey like no other. Whether you're a casual moviegoer or a true cinephile, the Silver Screen Podcast is your ticket to film magic. And cut.
I mean, we were talking about kind of the Romulan plot that forms kind of a crux of this episode. I will say, you brought up the Klingons. I do kind of like, and I wish they'd made more of, the fact that the Klingons are suspected, but they turn out to be a red herring, and they're just like a badass sort of, you know, special ops team.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. It's like, all right, cool. Yeah. You go through all this complicated, like, beaming in surveillance equipment, and they act all shady, and then, yeah, it turns out they're just, you know, Klingon James Bonds or something.
Yeah, I was actually, you know, quite enjoying that.
Yeah. So what about you, Dag? How did you feel about the kind of Romulan Klingon intrigue part of the book?
Romulans and Klingons are like cats and dogs. They're always going to be fighting and very rarely getting along. I do appreciate that the Klingon belligerence that was featured is, like you said, a really good red herring. It makes it seem like something's up with them. Like, we're trying to get these Romulans just to give a little, like a little update on what's going on. Here you go. And then the Klingons are starting crap on DS9. So
yeah,
very nicely done there. But the subterfuge of the Romulans, when you compare it to that through line, like, this is just a few episodes before the die is cast. They're already deep into planning this assault on the Founder homeworld. And this is just one more intelligence gathering session to refine that plan. Strangely, by Colonel Lovak, who was a changeling.
Yeah. Oh, again, don't get into that. We'll be here forever. It'll get very weird.
Yeah. No, I appreciated the intrigue of the episode. And O'Brien's circumstances always sort of take me away from looking too deeply at the Romulans when I'm watching the episode, because I'm still just like, the mysticism here. And another thing this thing does really, really nicely is DS9. I mean, all the shows do this in some capacity, but for me, it's my favorite series. And DS9 has a way of cleverly weaving its A, B, and C plots together. And in this one, you've got the A plot. O'Brien is shifting uncontrollably in time. The B plot, the Klingons are on the station causing trouble. The C plot, the Romulans are doing shifty things.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say something else there. The Romulans are doing shit. That's what they are.
Shaving cream. Never mind.
I think that's the thing, that the fact that it is kind of treated so lightweight and throwaway is kind of one of the things that I do dislike about the plotting. But I like the things that it gives you as a result of that, the sort of smaller things, if you know what I mean. So like the chance to have a little bit of an exploration of the Romulans being racist towards Odo. As a founder, you know, it's an interesting thing to explore. And again, it's going to be something that we deal with a lot. So it's nice to have that through line here. It's good. Let's see, who did I? Oh, it's good that the Klingon plot basically gives you a chance to see Quark being Quark in that kind of hilarious way. Because he, like, you know, O'Brien sees them having a fight in the bar, gets the Klingons banned from the bar, comes back and they're there. And Quark's like, well, they paid me triple and they weren't in the bar. They were in the holosuite, technically. It's a very kind of Quark thing to do.
Quark is so, like, money neutral. he doesn't have a standard, like, D&D lawful, chaotic, neutral. He's money neutral. And, like, that scene where O'Brien pops up and he looks across the promenade, he's like, hey, you've got bigger problems. I don't care about the weird time travel shenaniganery. I'm not making any money off of it. I'm going back to my bar.
Yeah, there's a second O'Brien, but, you know, he hasn't got any money on him, so I don't care.
up until future O'Brien can possibly earn him some latinum.
Yes, exactly, yeah. If next time you're passing the Darvo table, etc. I found myself liking that kind of tag at the end, even though I normally, ever since TOS, I kind of hate when they end on some kind of cheesy joke and do the laughing freeze frame, but I did like that when he kind of walks past Quark, says Darvo, and... it's like, all right, okay, I'll give you that.
Chief.
And yeah, I have to say the plot also gave a chance for Captain Sisko to basically channel his inner DK, which I was thinking about you the entire time when Sisko's discussing the Romulans to, I think, Kira, and says, well, you know, this is the Romulans for you. They don't do anything. They just sit back and pull the strings from a distance. Yeah. And I'm like, this is DK writing this, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a reason why Sisko is my favorite captain.
Fair enough. And I've just got random things written down. I do kind of love that Odo was, you know, when once they realize how serious he is, he's like, I'll investigate the Klingons, I'll put guards on the Romulans, and I'll also investigate Quark. And the captain's like, do you have reason to suspect Quark? I always investigate Quark.
Yeah, I love that line.
Just absolutely brilliant. So yeah, I mean, in terms of the writing, I think that's all that I've got. Obviously, I did actually think it was quite clever that they tie in the geeky lore that we know about the Romulan warbird being the source of the singularity because of its warp engines and stuff. Though I do have to question how Starfleet are dumb enough not to have realized, you know, there's Romulans on the station and a quantum singularity doing a circular orbit around. I wonder what the link could be. But, you know, whatever.
Unless they classified that information.
No, I mean, like, during the episode, Sisko and Dax and everyone are like, oh, there's a quantum singularity, that's what's causing it, but it seems to be doing a kind of, doing an orbit around the station. It's just a weird coincidence, and I'm like, guys, who's on the station? Work it out. You know?
Well, that's what I was thinking, is after the events of Timescape, they classified that knowledge.
Oh, about the Romulans, I see. Fair enough. Well, maybe, yeah. Cool. So, yeah, that's definitely all that I've got. For the writing, anyway, before I move on. Anything else that you guys wanted to shout out?
No.
I'm good.
I will get into one different section, like direction VFX, about the kind of, you know, the big epic destruction of the station and stuff later on, so that's why I'm seeming to skip past that. So the next thing I have, then, is the acting, which obviously, again, we've kind of touched on, but it's Colm Meaney's episode, so it kind of goes without saying. He's got the big ask of carrying it, and I think he does a great job. Even when you find yourself questioning the plot, you'd never question him or his character. The sort of through line of that, as you said, DK, there's slash fic teasing going on between him and Bashir quite heavily.
Yeah,
I think happens throughout the series. But I did like that they also have him doing that whole thing. There's a message for Keiko kind of thing. And again, just in terms of funny moments, when he travels to the future and wakes himself up, and the other version just, oh, not you again, to himself. I've looked in the mirror and said that once or twice, Miles. I can relate. So, yeah, what did you guys think of Colm in this episode?
I don't think he ever disappoints. He's always, no. he's always a good performance from Colm.
Yeah. What about you, Dag?
I would agree with DK. Again, no drama for the audience here. Colm Meaney always brings it, and if you watch interviews with him, you just get the sense of like, all right, what shit's gonna happen to me today?
Yeah, I did read that. I think it was the director of the episode said, so I'm perhaps jumping ahead a bit, but the director said that one of the things with this episode that was a challenge is that Colm Meaney just won't be sort of kept in one place. Like, you know, a lot of the time your actor, you're just sitting around like, oh, we're setting up the shots, we'll sit around and whatever. And he said, Colm Meaney just wouldn't have that. He was always popping outside for air or whatever. So he says it was a bit of a nightmare because you had to have him filming like two lots of scenes, obviously, for the various O'Briens, and then have him there while they set up stunt doubles and everything. So it was something to navigate. And I'm just like, that, in my head, that's just like a sitcom plot right there. You know, we can't find the star of the show. Where's O'Brien kind of thing? As he just wanders off outside.
You've literally just inspired me to do some kind of short story where Colm Meaney is actually affected by the thing that affected O'Brien. And that's why they made this episode this way, because Colm is the one who had the affliction. And so the reason they can't find him on set is because he's in the future telling them what a horrible director they are.
Oh, no, he's in the future, but they still can't find him because he's actually outside.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm 2 hours overdue.
But yeah, I mean, great actor though, and fully just always good, as you said. So I don't really have much about the others because it's very much not really anybody else's episode. So just a couple of like small things that I wanted to mention. First of all, I do like Avery Brooks, obviously, as always. I like that he kind of shows the dramatic tightrope of the Romulan investigation, but at the end, the whole kind of just glaring with them in the face off is just like, that's intimidating. I love that. Nana Visitor, I think, got quite a lot to do. I like that she's actually showing a soft and caring side when it comes to O'Brien, which we developed by the third season a little bit more than the kind of spiky self. But then we also get her like just ripping into the Romulans, which does rather beg a question, though, when she says to them, like, because, you know, they're getting very close to the truth about her and Odo. And she's like, this is too personal. I don't care. Just rip the cloaking device out of the Defiant. And I'm sitting there thinking, do you have the authority to tell them to do that? You're not Starfleet. It's not a Bajoran ship. Imagine if they did. And then Starfleet are just like, what did you do, Kira? But again, that's very much Mystery Science Theater. Mike, don't think about it too much kind of thing, I think. Yeah. Where am I? And yeah, I mean, like I said, Bashir in this episode, Sid Fadil, nice, cheeky, concerned, and then a little bit of, a little bit of the friendship going on. Terry Farrell gets very little to do, but gets to at least be a scientist. Armin Zimmerman's funny as Quark. I liked Renee as Odo. It's, as usual, it's kind of like put upon but diligent, does his job. And again, funny line, sometimes I have to remind you just how good I am. And there's no careful way to question a Klingon. And I think the Romulans were fine for what the story needed them to do, but like DK, it was very much, you know, mustache twirly one-dimensional. So, anything from any of the other actors then from you two that you wanted to bring up?
I'm re-envisioning the episode as like, this is, O'Brien is actually the C-plot, and the Romulan thing is the A-plot for the rest of the characters. And if you watch this episode in a vacuum, you're going, how come no one else is super worried that O'Brien's going to die? Like, they're just carrying on, like it's not a big deal. And then it dawns on you that, like, their primary thing is this Romulan thing that's going on. And O'Brien's an engineer, and we're in Starfleet, and temporal weirdness happens to our people all the time. This isn't a big deal. We're just not going to worry about the fact that he keeps coming back going, I'm dying, I'm dying, I'm dying. It's like, yeah, but you're traveling in time. You can fix it. It's fine.
He's Irish. He's naturally going to be overdramatic. I had an Irish granddad. He would say he was dying every other week. If he had a cough, he was dying. They're probably just like, yeah, whatever.
My wife says the same thing about me.
Oh, dear. But, yeah, I mean, like you said, it's just, it's really compelling still, despite everything, but... Yeah, there's a little bit. There's a meme that I really want to put in here as well at some point where, related to what you were saying, it's just kind of like, Chief O'Brien, I'm leaving the Enterprise up for this cushy kind of a deep space assignment on a station in the middle of nowhere. It's going to be fine. And then Chief O'Brien, a week later, just everything going wrong on fire. And just like, ah, feck it. Oh, dear. So, yeah, fair enough. What about you, Dickie? Any thoughts on the acting?
There's some nice little character moments in this. And, you know, I know it's par for the course when you've got Armin Zimmerman as Quark, but I do like Quark trying darts at the start of this and, you know, impaling Morn.
That could have been his eye.
I would have been liable for that.
I always like to see a good barroom brawl, and I think they did quite well on that one. You guys have mentioned most of them. Avery Brooks, always a, you know, it's always a pleasure to watch him.
Hmm. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I'll move us along then, because why not? We've done the kind of that side of things. So do you have any thoughts on the direction? I'm going to come to you guys first before I say anything.
I don't think a whole lot about the direction of things.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Again, I'm going to, you know, refer back to what I've just said. It's a good director can pull off a decent barroom brawl.
Yeah, and there's a lot to do. I mean, like I said, I already mentioned the thing about, you know, Colm playing two parts and being hard to pin down because he wants to go out for fresh air. And, you know, the director said he's in every scene twice, so we have to shoot it three times, lock the camera. Then he's coming to do this part, then he has to do the other part, and it's very difficult. And they apparently didn't want to do it all in blue screen because it's too time-consuming. So they said it would take 9 days, and apparently they were given 7, and it took 7.5. I would not fancy doing that directing gig. Wow. And the only other thing I have here, so before I get into a couple of notes I have, though the final scenes may look convincing in the finished episode, they weren't easy to produce, talking about the destruction of the station, I presume. Visual effects supervisor Gary Huttle explained, it was always confusing for the actor, because although the director and I have extensive discussions, till we arrive on set, we don't know ourselves exactly what's going to happen. So, yeah, flying blind. I wasn't about that. I was about the O'Brien stuff, so... Yeah, I kind of feel for them. With that in mind, I kind of feel bad criticizing some of the parts of the episode because it's like it could not have been easy to do, and it seems like they were wrecked. But yeah, I mean, there's not much to say about the direction, I will say. I like that the background's quite busy with kind of extras and stuff, but that's a regular sort of DS9 thing. I did notice an interesting pan around during the interview to show the back of a chair instead of just sticking rigidly on one person. And I like the future flashes and the way that O'Brien kind of sees his other self and locks eyes, and especially the initial ones when it feels kind of trippy and weird and you're not sure what's going on.
Yeah, I do like that. Very eerie.
Yeah. Anything else on the direction?
They definitely captured that sense of weirdness going on as O'Brien sort of stumbles upon what's actually happening with the plot.
For sure, yeah. Awesome. So the next, I have a big thing about the VFX because I did see we were going to get there. As we can see on screen, the destruction of the station was a pretty central part of the episode, even if it was kind of undone. So yeah, destroying the station proved to be the biggest special effect of the episode. Hutso commented, blowing up the station was a very big deal. We decided the station had to blow up and it had to be especially spectacular. So it was a very elaborate deal. Hutso connected this commitment to the larger change occurring behind the scenes, where the producers of DS9 were now much more interested in showing feature quality special effects than they had been during the run of Next Gen. Consequently, DS9 was granted a much larger budget for visual effects than its predecessor. For the actual destruction, special effects master Gary Monak had model maker Tony Meininger pull two new castings from the station's original six-foot mold. The duplicates were very similar to the original, but lacked any lighting elements. And Monak said of the whole process, we rigged it so that it would go off in about 10 stages, 10 separate explosions that had to go off within half a second. The explosions were shot with a high-speed camera at 10 to 15 times normal speed. The half-second multi-blast took up 5 to 7 seconds of film. Monak and his partner RJ Homan rigged the two models somewhat differently so they could decide after filming which explosion looked better. On what goes into making an explosion, Monak explained, there's a little bit of everything, glitter, black powder, rubber, cement, sparkle flash, sometimes a little high explosive primer code stuff. With the increasing use of CGI in television, VFX coordinator Judy Elkins defended the decision to use a live model, saying, you can't get the same effect with a computer. You don't get the fireballs, the fire effects, the shards, the pieces flying away. When you're working on a big scale like this, there's nothing like blowing up a big model. It's just beautiful. And those several shots of the station's destruction were filmed. Only a small portion actually made it into the final episode. So hopefully we have some special effects nuts that appreciated the little deep dive that I was able to get into there. I think I would agree with them. I used to always like model shots back in the DS9 day, and I do think there's a little bit, something a bit more tangible to them when you're doing things like this, so that a CGI kind of explosion wouldn't necessarily have captured. So what do you guys think about this big epic station destruction scene?
So good. Yeah. Oh. I mean, as you can tell, two out of three of us have decided that this is going to represent us in this episode.
Oh, it will be the thumbnail when this episode goes up on YouTube. I've already made it. Yeah, I mean, it is the central part of the episode, and it did look, it was spectacular. Seeing the kind of runabout flying off and then it just blowing up was just, it's a visceral shot, because like I said, after 3 years, it's kind of become known as our home now, and it's brutal to see, which again is partly, I think, what contributed to me thinking, and the Romulans are just going to get a slap on the wrist for trying to do this, you know?
I find it quite amusing that Colin probably got home and his significant other said, you know, how was this episode? And he says, oh, this is a good one. Yeah, O'Brien's suffering again, but I think it's a really good one. I'm going to be really, really remembered for this. And then the big thing that most everyone remembers from this is the station blowing up.
Overshadowed by a second model. Yeah, I think you liked the scene as well then, DK, given your avatar is the station blowing up.
Definitely, yes. Dag was spot on with that.
Yeah, it obviously took a lot of work, but I think it's safe to say it was worth it because we were all really impressed. So even if it's only a few seconds on screen, kudos. So yeah, any other thoughts on the kind of VFX or the production design, anything like that? Other than, I will say, my one note that I've got down, DK, just because you're starting to infect me, I've just put, oh no, the shoulder pads, Beatles hair and dodgy foreheads.
Yeah.
That's what I was referring to.
It's embarrassing.
Bloody Romulan. Anyway. Yeah. Anything from you, Dag, about all of that kind of production, VFX, that kind of thing?
You know, there aren't a whole lot. Like this scene, the destruction of Tarak Nor really overshadows the episode in terms of special effects quantity. You get some stuff where like O'Brien sort of flashing and that. But you know, that's easy enough to do by that point in Star Trek history. They've done similar effects frequently. Yeah. But blowing up a model of a ship, you know, they've only done that a couple of times in Trek history, and it's always the hero base.
Yeah.
And it always, it's gripping. I don't think the destruction of the station hits as hard because the tone of the episode is still pretty lighthearted, despite the fact that there's this plot to destroy Tarak Nor. So it doesn't hit as hard as say Star Trek III. Mm. Or I can't remember the name of the episode where the Enterprise goes through the time loop 17 times, but that one.
Why am I blanking on that one? I'm glad that, cause and effect. There we go.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. When you see the destruction of your hero ship, it's always hurtful. And again, later in DS9, we actually see the destruction of the real hero ship, and I cried. So
why? It was back the next week.
I actually missed that episode of the first run. So
really? Okay. Cool. Yeah. No, that's fair enough. I mean, like I said, I know, DK, that you would appreciate it because, like me, you probably grew up on stuff like classic Doctor Who and Red Dwarf and stuff where they were blowing up models every other week.
Yeah.
Just an entire generation of psychopaths that were just like some elaborate looking spaceship that looks really cool and realistic. And what are we going to do with it? Blow it up.
Blow it up.
So, cool. Fair enough. I think that might be the last section that I have. Oh, no, I did have down. Do you have anything on the music and the effects? Nothing really stood out to me except a little bit of the more dramatic sort of cliche underscoring the moments music. But it was quite generic-ish.
Yeah, nothing really stood out for me.
Fair enough. So, do you guys have anything else then before we get into our favourite character moment and line?
Let's go.
Let's go. Cool. This is the part where we basically pick exactly what I just said. So, Dag, did you want a second or two to gather your thoughts since you're probably not expecting this? You want to go last?
Yes.
Cool. So, in that case, I'll come to you first then, DK, and ask who was your favourite character in this episode?
Well, it's got to be Miles, hasn't it? You've got to give it to him.
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite a dull one because, I just put O'Brien. And like I said, thankfully, Colm Meaney can carry an episode. So I think if a lesser actor, it might have actually been even worse for me perhaps at times. So, yeah. What about you, Dak?
I'm going to say O'Brien with a twist.
Okay.
All of the O'Briens that the O'Brien we follow encounter.
Okay, fair enough. That makes sense.
Because they're always like, oh, now I have to suffer twice.
Yeah. You go back to the past and relive the next 8 hours a bit differently or whatever. Oh, do I have to? fair enough. So, DK, what was your favorite moment or scene in the episode?
My favorite scene, it was it seems very lightweight and very shallow, but I do like the dart scene at the start.
Yeah, you say that, but it became a huge part of the show going forward. I mean, it was a bonding thing for Bashir and O'Brien in multiple episodes, and it was important. So, yeah, that's fine by me.
It really humanizes the show in a way that is relatable to the viewer, and it makes O'Brien more of that everyman that any viewer watching the show can be like, hey, I relate to that guy. They might relate to a whole bunch of other characters, but O'Brien is, I would dare say, universally relatable, and the introduction of the dartboard then carrying through the rest of the season is a human hallmark.
Yeah, and I have to say, I know it's not this episode, but I really like the way that it was used in when they reveal about Julian being genetically enhanced in Dr. Bashir, I presume, when O'Brien's kind of dealing with all that. And then, after a little bit of time, he's like, hang on, you said your hand-eye coordination was, improved. So when we've been playing darts, have you been letting me win? Just, show me what you can do. And O'Brien and Bashir just, like, throws three straight bullseyes. So O'Brien's like, right, from now on, I'm playing from up here. You're playing from all the way back here. And if that doesn't work, we'll try a blindfold. it's clever the way they use it for those plots. And kind of cool. I liked it. My favorite scene, I have to say, was it already came up earlier, but the scene where O'Brien is arguing with Bashir about not saving his life. Because, again, it's something you could only really have in this kind of episode. And it was so amusing. And right down to the cutoff of, well, maybe it was my doctor. Something, as he's kind of transporting back. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of funny. I'll give you that. What about you, Doug?
My favorite scene is when Miles jumps to the future the last time and he wakes himself up in bed and they're trying to figure out what's going on. Well, if you feel ill, shouldn't I feel ill?
Yeah.
And then the classic line, I hate temporal mechanics, which gets repeated by Janeway later in Voyager. The casual hand waving of weird time travel stuff. It keeps me focused on the episode as well, but then you always want to spin off and go, wait a second, why isn't this working right? And I love those moments.
we're geeks. I mean, that's what we do, isn't it? Really, at times, but fair enough. And so, yeah, lastly, DK, what was your favourite line in the episode?
I do think the... I do love the... You think Quark had something to do with this? I always investigate Quark. But I do have to point out, I do like the little kind of serendipitous line in this episode, because obviously at the same time we're going to be recording Rebel Without a Cause.
Mm-hmm.
And I do love that during the barroom brawl, Quark shouts out, "They're tearing my place apart!"
Yeah, the audience can tune into our other channel for that review. Dag won't be a part of that one, but we'll have another guest for that on the Silver Screen podcast. But yeah, I didn't even notice that, but it's such a random weird coincidence.
Yeah.
Tearing my brawl apart. I'm going to slightly act out this exchange that's my favourite line, and thankfully it hasn't been ruined and hasn't come up yet. So yeah, Sisko, "Major, when you're with the Romulans, try to be diplomatic." "I'm always diplomatic," screen cut. That is the most ridiculous thing I ever heard, and I resent the implication. I'm a sucker for comedy. How can I say? Every time. Cool. So, very quickly then, before we head on to the audience response, what was the overall message you took from the episode? I'm going to start us off because you've kind of already kind of said it a few times. The only message that I could think of to write down is the simple four words: "I hate temporal mechanics." So that was my takeaway from this. What about you, DK?
Mine is O'Brien is the Star Trek Universe's version of Peter Parker.
He's the Star Trek Universe's version of Kenny from South Park at this stage. I got to kill O'Brien again. But yeah, fair enough. What about you, Doug?
There's a reason O'Brien is known as the greatest Starfleet officer of in the history of Starfleet.
I love that.
Some say the Force binds the universe together, but O'Brien's the one who provides the duct tape.
I love that.
One of the takeaways from this episode, just in retrospect from the whole season, is that I think O'Brien is, and there's another theory out there that goes with this, kind of pilfering from that. O'Brien's definitely the subject of a Bajoran prophecy.
Really?
Like the if you just do the through line here, like in the first season, Kaio Paka comes to the station, sees O'Brien, and is like suddenly very reverent and gives him jewelry for his kid.
Mm.
And then the very next episode, O'Brien goes with Bashir to a Bajoran city to stave off the Dalroc.
Mm.
And then we get this episode where O'Brien is very involved in protecting Deep Space Nine and the Emissary.
And the wormhole, for that matter.
And the wormhole. And then the last episode for me in the arc is the assignment, where O'Brien culminates in the prophecy by, you know, one who was forced to destroy the wormhole and then destroys the demon of the wormhole at the last second. Just heroic arc in this prophecy.
That's a cool little thought, and yeah, I can see where you're coming from with that for sure. It also explains why it would be Keiko that was possessed by a part of Wraith, which seemed previously quite random. But yeah, fair enough. Awesome. Right, so DK, I believe I gave you some of the audience response so as to split it up a little bit, even though we don't have very much this week. So
you didn't give me it.
Oh no, it's in Facebook Messenger. I definitely sent it to you. You were asleep at the time.
Oh god. Hold on, let me check.
Don't worry, I'll start us off this week. So yes, without any more rambling, for now I will move into the audience response in the section that I call Subspace Communications.
Incoming transmission.
And yeah, I have split it between myself and DK, so you're not just listening to one voice. But we didn't have as much as we have had for previous weeks. So again, if I do kind of prompt you on Facebook or on social media, feel free, or you know, leave it in the YouTube comments for any upcoming episodes that you think are something you want to be interested in, just to give your thoughts and share them with us, and then we can read it out and give you a shout out on the show. So the first one that I have, or the first few that I have, are from the Facebook group Star Trek Family. Dennis Earl Morrison III says, "I give it a 4 out of 5. Weird ending with Prime O'Brien dying." And Bess Hubbard in the same group said, "Great episode, 5 out of 5. Over on my blue sky at manbrother.bsky.social, "This is an all-time effed implications episode. because the straightforward interpretation is the O'Brien you started the series with is dead. You now get to continue with an alt-timeline O'Brien who is keenly aware he does not belong but can't say anything about it. Yeah. On my personal Instagram, Rauer Quiz has simply a two-word response, hit Romulans. Okay. On Threads, Western HMS says, it's like the fourth or fifth best Nobody Likes O'Brien episode. It's no Whispers and certainly no Hard Time. And I think that's it. That's all I have, DK. And I think everything you have is from the Ships of the Line Facebook group, if you wanted to read that out there.
It is, yes. Start off with the scores. Dan Finnegan gives it 4.5 out of 5. Paul Zoller gives it 5. Drew Evans says, one of the first episodes of DS9 I ever saw. Totally lost throughout most of the episode, but still enjoyed it nonetheless. Honestly, Drew, you should watch it when you're drunk. Phil Pace says, brilliant episode, 4 stars. Romulans being bar stewards, Klingons can't be subtle and sneaky. However, with those sensor readings and Romulans on the station, they should have probably guessed at a cloak ship. Wyatt Sullivan gives it 4 stars. Jim Goff says, this is as good as a season 3-4 TNG episode. 4-5 for me. It's a great episode. I remember buying it back on VHS back in the old days.
One of ours.
Yeah. And Jeffrey Wood says, several nice moments, but time travel was already exhausted by this point. And O'Brien being replaced by a future version of himself is one of those tropes that always bugs me. I think I've seen it twice in 25 years. That is a that's a high standard there, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's it for the Ships of the Line one.
Cool. That's fair enough. That's all the feedback we had for that one. So I will get to our conclusions and scores, but before I do that, can't put it off any longer. I did actually do a limerick for this episode, and I am going to share it with you now, so please be kind. So everybody get ready, get comfortable. I'm no Adrian, but I tried, so let's see what I've come up with. So, visionary. O'Brien keeps jumping through time and uncovers a Romulan crime. He just wants to play darts and hang out down at Quark's. Now he's stuck in the future and dying.
That's a good one.
Fair enough. Yeah, awesome. I think I did all right. Like I said, I'm sure Adrienne could have come up with something better. But, you know, maybe next time she's on, maybe we'll get one. So, yeah, the all that remains now, then, is for us to give our conclusions and our score out of 5 Starfleet Deltas.
A spark analysis.
And, again, Dag, you won't be expecting this, so we'll probably come to you last. I think I'll start us off this time because I might be the most negative again. So, yeah, my conclusion is thus. An enjoyable but rather lightweight episode, especially for DS9, and despite the rather huge death and destruction that kind of happened. And that's the thing, the episode wants to deal in huge epic scope, but in the end it's kind of meaningless. O'Brien is replaced by himself. So, functionally that means nothing. The Romulans have a pretty huge plot to destroy the station and wormhole, but they suffer no consequences for this and just leave with no mention of this ever again. The time travel makes less sense than usual and started to hurt my brain until I just disengaged it. It was fun seeing the crew interact, the characters that have been established, and the cool special effects. But beyond that, there's really nothing here. The idea of the Romulans throwing their weight around is interesting, but so badly undercut by the ending. I did like that they profile the Klingons and they turn out to be innocent and just a random badass hit squad, as I said. There were some nice heartfelt moments and good funny ones, but this just felt overall like an episode with no weight or substance. Not bad, not good. Not really memorable in any way. An enjoyable enough light snack, but hardly a hearty meal. And I give it 2.5, 2.5 out of 5. So, yeah. DK, over to you.
Okay. I've put, oh, look, Romulans being sneaky. Who would have guessed? I kid, though. It's DS9. Everyone's sneaky. It's not an awful little 40 minutes. There's some nice moments. It's held together by an intriguing through line with a little mystery thrown in. Slightly derivative, which ruins the fun somewhat. But all in all, it's an okay, another okay installment of Chief O'Brien Suffers. Though by this point in proceedings, while Federation staff do not immediately suspect Romulans as soon as they turn up from a clogged toilet onwards is beyond me. And I've also given it 2.5.
Wow, okay, fair enough. So, Dag, your conclusion and score then, if you don't mind, will hopefully end on a high.
I am going to just limit the scope of this to the presentation of the temporal shenaniganery. I absolutely get caught up in O'Brien trying to figure out just what the heck is happening to him and the people around him who are interacting with that aspect of the plot that I completely forget Klingons are in this episode, except for the fight. And the Romulan thing seems so obvious from the beginning that I'm like, well, yeah, of course it's the Romulans, but it's not about the fact that it's the Romulans. It's about what they're up to this time. So, with all of that being said, the light moments, the absolute bangers that René Auberjonois is popping out in all of his scenes, Quark just reacting to it as completely quirkly as possible. I'm going to give this one a 4.7 out of 5.
Wow. Okay. Ooh, huge score. 4.7. Yeah. So safe to say you disagree with us, Ed, but, that's okay. We'd like to have different voices. So yeah, putting those together and sharing it by the number of guests or people here, which is 3, gives a final score for Visionary of 3.3 out of 5. So not bad. I mean, not huge, not great. Probably not going to be topping the leaderboard, but I think Dag's score certainly saved it from any blushes there at the end. So yeah, cool. Right, so that concludes business for this episode. If I'm not mistaken, I think we have one more Romulan-themed episode before we take a small break to focus on our other Silver Screen movie-based podcast. So do join us next week for that, when we will be looking at the Voyager episode, Eye of the Needle. And DK will not be with us for that one. I don't think so. Yeah, but we will have a couple of good guests hopefully with us. So yeah, I think we discussed this episode, and I like that we had somebody on who defended it as well as myself and DK, who were perhaps a bit more cynical towards it. So, and yeah, thanks for being a great first-time guest as well, Dag, for all of your sort of Star Trek opinions, your hilarious impressions and various bits and pieces. So want to shout out where people can find you. Do you want to plug your podcast and where people can perhaps locate you social media-wise?
Yeah, sure. First, it was great to be on the show. I'm so glad for the communication that you've had. I think you put the call out for this like 6 months ago. Amazing. So yeah, I'm Dag. You can find me on Twitter at Trek Nexus, and I am one of the founding co-hosts of Beyond Trek Podcast, also on Twitter. And you can find us on YouTube and I think Spotify bought Anchor, so it's Anchor by Spotify now.
Okay, cool. And you can always find our link tree and our information in the description, or if you're on YouTube, it'll hopefully be up on screen now if I've edited in the new sort of graphic that I've made. But basically, we're on YouTube as Hit or Miss Star Trek, Spotify, or anywhere you get audio podcasts as Silver Screen Podcast / Hit or Miss Star Trek Podcast. Facebook groups just under Hit or Miss Star Trek. Instagram as HOM Star Trek Podcast. Mastodon at HOMTrek at mstdn.social. Threads is just my personal one, michael.k.wilson. Blue Sky at mikepods.bsky.social. And the artist formerly known as Twitter, we are at Trek Screen Pods with capital T, S, and P. So, in all of those places, where can we find you, DK?
In a cave somewhere. That's pretty much it. I don't really go for social media. I do have something to promote, though, actually. Shocks. I recently had a part in a horror drama. It's the Eye for Investigate podcast and their most recent production, Shambler from the Stars. I loved working with those guys. It's an excellent repertory group, and I'm proud of being able to be part of such a great team. The episodes are now available, so you can binge it if you would like. If you're a horror fan, particularly the works of H.P. Lovecraft or radio drama, I hope you'll give it a go. And it's available, like this episode, wherever you get audio podcasts, but I'll you know, give you the links, Mike.
Yeah, and I'll pop them in the descriptions and such on the podcast providers and YouTube. So yeah, hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. Apologies if you were a fan of the episode, felt we were a bit harsh, but like I said, at least we had a voice that was supporting it. And I think you'll be seeing Dag again, because I'm pretty sure we've got you down for a couple of other episodes later in the seasons or later this year anyway. So looking forward to that. It's been nice to get to know you, and tune in, listeners and viewers, and we'll see you then. And in the meantime, remember, we are Starfleet. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
You have been listening to the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast, hosted by Michael Wilson and DK. Produced and edited by Mike Wilson. Additional material by DK. Please remember to like this episode and spread it throughout subspace. Subscribe to the Hit or Miss YouTube channel and follow us online. Links to all of our social media pages can be found via the link tree listed in the episode's description. For any queries or to apply to be a guest on the show, you can also email homstartrek@gmail.com. This podcast is part of the Mike's Podcasts Network. You can listen to this and our sister podcasts on all good podcast providers by searching for Mike's Podcasts. Hit or Miss Podcast was based on an idea by Michael Wilson and Will Templer. Thank you for joining us. We hope you'll be back, but for now, hailing frequencies closed.
I'm gonna warp out of here at once, maximum speed.